The House Education Committee will come to order. The time is 8 a.m. on April 5th. Today we are joined by Representative Seaton, Representative Reinbold, myself, Representative Gaddis, and Representative Ledoux. On our agenda today, we're going to have confirmation hearings for James Fields for the Board of Education and Early Development, Melody Mann, and David Devon for the Professional Teaching Practices Commission, and we'll also hear HB 154 and HB 190. I plan to hand the gavel over to my esteemed vice chair here in about half an hour, and we'll get going here. Online, we have Melody Mann. And Melody, if you're there, please introduce yourself.
Good morning. I'm Melody Mann.
And let us know why you'd like to be on the Professional Teaching Practices Commission.
Well, I've been teaching for 23 years now, and I guess the reason I wanted to participate in this commission was that I follow a lot of the goings-on around the state with teachers, and I just feel like I have a good sense of integrity and justice that I feel I could bring to the committee, the commission.
Thank you, and we do have your resume, and if we have any questions from folks, Representative Reinbold.
Hello, Melody. Thank you for your willingness to serve. And I see that you have a master's degree in education and a bachelor of science, so that's great. I was just wondering, where would you like to see education going in our future? There's several things that are on the docket right now in regards to charter schools and possibly opening a few more opportunities. Lots of school choice issues on the table, a little bit more accountability coming on, and I'm just wondering, where do you want to take education in the future of Alaska?
First of all, I truly believe in Alaska's public education system. I'm a product of it. My concern is that there seems to be a growing lack of trust in public educators. I believe it's unfounded. I believe teachers work really hard, and my hope is that participating in this commission, by participating in this commission, I can help reassure Alaskans that teachers are doing the best they can with what they're given. I am really concerned about the lack of resources we have for public education, and so I'm not very pleased with what's going on in the legislature right now in terms of not adding to the BSA and things like that. I'm doing what I can in terms of letting my legislators know, but that we need more resources and more help. But from my point of view, I just feel like I can help on the commission. I can help make sure that teachers are working with public trust, with integrity.
Okay. Representative Reinbold, and if you'll just a moment, we've been joined by Representative Drummond, and go ahead, Representative Reinbold.
Okay, second, twice on your resume, you mentioned the NEA, and one of them, you were a member of the NEA Minority Leadership Cadre, and also, I'm just wondering what your feelings are about the NEA, and are you happy with the work that they've been doing and the direction they've been taking education the last many years?
For years ago, I got leadership training through NEA's Minority Leadership Cadre, And I was afforded the opportunity to go around the state with a team working with Alaska Natives mostly on becoming leaders in their own locals and you know, helping to just have a say in what goes on in their school districts, and I value that training. I do still participate in NEA Alaska. I'm oftentimes a member on the Delegate Assembly, which is our annual meeting to set the direction of NEA Alaska. And I believe it's a wonderfully democratic organization. I appreciate their efforts on teachers' behalf around the state.
Do we have any other questions for Ms. Mann? Do we have a motion to move her name forward?
I make a motion to forward the nominee for Alaska Professional Teachers Practices Commission to a joint session of the legislature for confirmation. Melody Mann.
Thank you. And while we fill out the paperwork for Melody Mann, we do have James Fields online. James, are you with us?
Yes, I am. Thank you.
And if you'll introduce yourself for the record and why you'd like to be confirmed, we'd appreciate it.
Okay, my name is James Fields. I'm from Glen Ellyn, Alaska. And why I'd like to be confirmed is just to make our state education system better, not only for the kids, but also for all of the people that it affects, whether it's teachers, administrators, parents, our whole state in general. So I think it's a great opportunity for not only me, but for our district to be represented and for our EAAs to be represented on the board. So those are my main reasons.
Do we have any questions? Seeing none, do I have a motion to move his name forward?
I make a motion to forward James Field to the Board of Education and Early Development to a joint session of the legislature for confirmation.
Seeing no objection, we'll fill out that paperwork. At this point, we do not have anybody else online. Yeah. We do have David Devon, and we've had him in our packet. Do we have a motion to move his name forward for the Professional Teaching Practices Commission?
I make a motion to move David Devon to the Professional Teaching Practices Commission to the Joint Legislature for confirmation.
Thank you. Representative Ledoux.
Have we heard from David?
We have not heard from David, although we do have his name and his resume in the packet.
Brief at ease.
We're back on the record. And let me remind you that these confirmation reports, that this does not reflect intent by any of the members to vote for or against this individual during any further sessions for the purpose of confirmation. Representative Seaton.
And Madam Chair, although we weren't able to interview Mr. Devon at this point, we do have his presentation and materials in our books, and I just want to point out that this is for the Professional Teaching Practices Commission. It's not a policy-making body. This is the Ethics Committee for making sure that teachers are, you know, in serving ethically, and if there's any problems, that's like our Ethics Committee. So I think that the questions are somewhat different than if he was going for the Board of Education, where we would have policy questions for him. So.
Thank you. It's my understanding that he may call in and we still may be able to talk to him, but he does have a resume that we've been able to look at And with that, we'll move the paperwork along. Representative Ledoux.
I was just going to say that I won't object to moving the paperwork along, but I do feel a little bit uncomfortable in that the idea of a committee interview is to at least somewhat vet an applicant through questions, if we have anything, and when an applicant isn't before the committee, that's somewhat difficult to do.
Thank you. Note taken. Okay, next on the agenda is House Bill 154, and I understand that the sponsor has a CS that he'd like to introduce. Is there a motion to adopt the committee substitute for House Bill 154, version N? I make a motion to accept a committee substitute version.
Okay, I make a motion to adopt a committee substitute for House Bill 154, version N.
And I see that the bill sponsor and staff have come forward. Please introduce yourself for the record, and we'll have a go at it. Thanks.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I'm Steve Thompson from Fairbanks House District 3, and I want to thank you and the committee for hearing House Bill 154 today. House Bill 154 is an act relating to natural and cultural history repositories. It revises statutes governing the University of Alaska, adding a new section that designates the Museum of the North as a repository of the state natural and cultural history collections, and gives the university the authority to designate other repositories as needed. The bill also defines the purpose of and the functions of a repository. Museum collection includes 1.4 million artifacts and specimens, representing millions of years of biological diversity and thousands of years of cultural traditions. These are crucial resource items that need to be available. Designating the Museum of the North as a repository will help ensure that the historical collection remains available to researchers, students, Alaska citizens, and others with an interest in our cultural history and in interest in repositories. I have my staff with me today. Lynette Berg is here to explain the CS and answer any questions. And also online we have the chief curator of the Museum of the North, Kevin Winker. If you have any questions also, you want to make a statement. So I appreciate very much you hearing the bill today. I'm supposed to be up in another committee meeting right now, so I'm going to let you question my staff.
Thank you, Representative, and let's not hold up your meetings. Thanks.
Thank you very much.
You'll introduce yourself for the record, and we're ready to go.
Good morning, Madam Chair and committee members. My name is Lynette Burge, and I'm staff for Representative Steve Thompson, and I'm here to answer any questions you might have about HB 154.
Representative Seaton.
Madam Chair, I'm on page 1 at the end of line 6 and 7. I don't have any problems at all with designating the, having the university designate the Museum of the North, but I'm curious of why we would be giving the university the power to designate any other museums across the state as repositories.
Through the chair, Representative Seaton, the intention is, since it is under University of Alaska, it would be campuses that have museums that would be designated as repositories, and they cannot work outside of the university system to make a designation.
Does that answer your question?
Well, because I guess, Madam Chair, when we get to the university, I guess I can ask them what that would be.
So perfect. And he is online. Any other questions for the bill sponsor?
Thank you, Madam Chair and committee members, for hearing this today. As I understand it, yes, in answer to your question, Representative Seaton.
And excuse me, Mr. Winker, if you could introduce yourself and who you're with for the record, please.
Certainly, Madam Chair. My name is Kevin Winker. I'm Chief Curator and Acting Director right now at the University of Alaska Museum in Fairbanks. And in answer to that question of Representative Seaton's, it is my understanding, yes, that such designations would be limited entirely to within the UA system, and it would be to allow those designations to occur at the other MAUs, the other campuses of the University of Alaska.
Representative Seaton?
I guess I'm just it's a little broad at this point in time for me. At this point, I mean, I know the Museum of the North. I know that. I'm just not sure. I just want to find out the parameters. So as the bill goes along, we have testimony if people would. I have no problem with the bill and with the Museum of the North and to the university. I'm trying to figure out whether we're talking about the Museum of the North, basically, or here it seems like we're just giving the university the power to designate at any campus, whether it's rural campus, main campuses, wherever, repositories as needed. And I'm just, I want to find out the parameters of that. So thank you, Madam Chair.
You bet. Mr. Winker, can you comment or clarify that for us?
I think Representative Seaton is correct that the main purpose is the designation of the University of Alaska Museum of the North. And I also would relish clarification for future designations. Although being at a campus and needing to use these resources for both research and education, I think it's a great idea to allow for the future potential, whether we allow for that future potential to be designated through you guys there, representatives in Juneau, or through the UA. That's up to you guys to decide, I suspect.
Representative Reinbold.
Hi, just a really quick question. I see a zero fiscal note on this, and it sounds like this is an important bill. I'm in no way opposing the bill, but I'm just wondering, with the time of tightening belts across the state right now, do you anticipate any costs for this at all to the state in the future?
I don't anticipate any costs directly associated with this bill. There are, of course, costs with maintaining collections, but we already undertake this role as sort of a de facto purpose. The point of this, from our perspective, is to prevent collections that haven't come here or to the State Museum to knowingly have a legislated home, if that makes sense, so that there is a designated repository on paper so that collections don't simply leave the state to go to other institutions outside the state.
Thank you, and we'll let the record show that Representative Sadler has joined us. Do we have any more questions for Mr. Winker or the bill sponsor? Okay, we'll move to public testimony, and I don't see anybody signed up. Is there anybody in the audience that would like to testify? Well, I think we're coming with some public testimony. Stand by. We do have Linda Thibodeau, I hope I pronounced her name correct, with the Department of Education, that is here if we have questions. Do we have any questions for her? Representative Seaton?
Excuse me, Madam Chair, I was trying to read something. Could you repeat that?
Oh, no problem. We do have Linda Thibodeau with the Department of Education. I see that she's with the EED, either Street or Saint Museum, but with the museum at it for, and she's here for questions if we have any.
I do, Madam Chair.
So, Linda, if you'll come forward and introduce yourself for the record. And I'm sorry if I've got your last name, and if you'll give it a go, I'll listen here.
Good morning. For the record, my name is Linda Thibodeau, and I'm the director of the Division of Libraries, Archives, and Museums. And that was the State Museum, not the Street Museum. I apologize for my poor handwriting.
Representative Seaton.
Thank you, Madam Chair. The sponsor statement and the backup material on this is talking about the University of the North, a very established museum, and all that, you know, I understand. My question is, does the Alaska State Museum have the authority to designate other museums in the state as repositories, or is are you designated as a repository individually as a state museum?
Through the chair, Representative Seaton, we do not have that exact language in our statute, the repository language, but we do have statute that designates us and our branches as the state museum, and so that is satisfactory for our purposes.
Representative Seaton.
So within your statutes or within our policies to you, it's designated by the legislature that you and your branches are to.
Through the chair, Representative Seaton, that's correct.
Thank you, Madam Chair.
Thank you. Any more questions? Thank you very much. And as I was asking, we have moved to public testimony, and we do not have anybody signed up. Is there anybody in the audience that would like to speak to this? Is there anybody else online who'd like to speak to it? Testimony is now closed. We'll bring this discussion back to the committee.
Madam Chair.
Representative Seaton.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And I guess I'm uncomfortable since in every situation that I can see is the legislature has designated, whether it's to the State Museum and its branches or the other specific museums that are designated in the bill. So I have no problem with the bill. However, granting the authority of the university to make those determinations of any other repositories as needed, I think, is problematic, and I would like to ask the sponsor whether that is an integral part of their bill or whether it just kind of is an add-on.
Sure, fair question. If you'll introduce yourself for the record.
Again, my name is Lynette Burge, staff for Representative Steve Thompson. Through the chair, Representative Seaton, I believe that by statutes, if we single out the University Museum of the North as the only one that can be a repository, that we are causing a situation where it's not open to other campuses to be able to have a repository. So I think we're making a separate class, and I think that that is primarily the reason that they have added to that, that other campuses may have museum repositories if the University of Alaska so designates.
Makes sense to me. Any more questions?
Thank you, Madam Chair.
Anybody else have any comments or questions? Is there a motion to move this bill from committee?
I move House Bill 154, Work Order 28LS0613, version N, is in November from the House Education Committee with attached fiscal notes and individual recommendations.
And I'll object for discussion.
There's been an objection for discussion.
And, Madam Chair, I'm not opposed to moving this bill. However, I would like the sponsor, as this goes along, this just came out through the public testimony and investigation of the bill, but I would like the sponsor to really clarify whether that language of giving the university the ability to designate other museums within its system is something that we should reserve for the legislature to make those repository designations. And so with that, Madam Chair, I'd remove my objection.
Thank you. The objection has been removed, and we'll move this bill out of committee. And seeing no objection, we'll stand at ease while we fill some paperwork, and I pass the gavel.
Record House Education Committee, and now we will continue with House Bill 190, and it looks like the sponsor has come forward, so you know the routine.
Thank you, Madam Chair and Committee. I am House Representative Paul Seaton, Representative District 30, which is Seldovia to the Kenai River. House Bill 190, the impetus for this bill came from testimony that came before the House Education Committee. Students that were involved in the ANSEP program, the Alaska Native Science and Engineering program, were testifying that they had taken courses at the university and passed those, but were only receiving half credit for the UA courses because they hadn't had enough seat time at certain districts. That's not all districts. So what this bill does is it allows students who can demonstrate mastery of course content to challenge or test out of high school courses and receive academic credit. It leaves the criteria for demonstrating mastery to the discretion of the school district. It requires that districts to provide an option for students to challenge courses through an assessment, and that could be a final exam for a test or another assessment, that the final exam for a course or other assessment that the district designs. Credits would apply to fulfilling the requirements for the Alaska Performance Scholarship, but not necessarily factored into the student's GPA if no letter grade is given. And it does not attempt to establish credit for courses that may be prerequisites for the challenged course. So why are we doing this? Currently, there is no requirement that school districts provide an opportunity for students to challenge courses to receive academic credit. Some districts have pre-approved tech prep plans for certain college courses, but these are primarily focused on vocational coursework and are limited to establishing agreements between campuses. We have talked to the districts, and what do they say? We emailed all superintendents in the state for feedback. This gives them the authority to develop a policy on course credit challenges. Some already allow course challenges, such as Anchorage, Kenai, Matsu, and North Star, and others have not done so yet, such as Wrangell and Huna. Others we did not hear back from. It was good to establish a unified approach across the state for challenging courses. This keeps students engaged in learning and challenged with rigorous coursework. Anchorage Credit by Choice program was established by policy on credit by examinations, where students must score at least 90% to demonstrate proficiency. This bill does not establish what the proficiency level for a certain district will be. This allows the districts themselves to designate mastery of the subject, does not take any of their authority away. The Chugach model, and you have that as well, supports this philosophy and counts towards the Alaska Performance Scholarship. Kenai also has had success, and Matsu will be testifying today. And it's hard for us as legislators to promote high academic achievement in education if we leave in place policies that could keep students sitting in classes where they already can demonstrate mastery of the majority of the information. House Bill 190 remedies that, and House Bill 90 will remove a barrier to students who wish to receive credit for their coursework and support a learning environment that continues to challenge and reward student initiative. So, Madam Chair, the bill is fairly straightforward. As I said, it came out of testimony that came before this committee to resolve that problem, but to resolve it in a more universal way to make sure that we have students not languishing in classes where they already know the material, just for a seat time requirement. So thank you, Madam Chair, and I'd be happy to answer any questions. We do have some people online to testify as well.
Okay, I have a question actually for the school district. I don't know if anybody is, it's in regards to the fiscal situation. It says school district must establish an assessment tool for the student to demonstrate secondary school course mastery. And I want to ensure that that's that with a zero fiscal note. I mean, maybe this is something they already have. So I'd like to ask the department, you know, if they already have something in place to do this.
Sure. And Madam Chair, just for clarification, we are not doing a unified course across the state. We're not requiring the Department of Ed to come through and develop mastery, demonstration of mastery. We're not taking any of that away from districts. currently design their own tests at the end of a course to determine, and we're not designating at what exact level each district must say. Some districts, let's say 90 is an A. Some districts might want to say that to challenge out of a course, you must know 90, you must score over 90% on your final exam. That could be a just district choice. Another district might say, you know, if a student can demonstrate that they already know 85% of the material, do we want to have them sitting in a classroom where they already know 85% of the material, or do we want to have them move along to a more challenging course and pick up that other 15%, which will probably be incorporated in the more challenging course anyway. So this is not imposing on a district any particular assessment tool. As we say, they could use the final test that's already utilized by the teacher or by the school district. All this says is that they have to have an ability to do an assessment for a course that they already offer. And my presumption is that every district and every school must have some way to assess whether students have mastered the material before they exit the course anyway. So right. But we do have Matt Sue online. I don't know if we have other superintendents that might be online as well.
Because I do think conceptually it's a great idea, but being in the classroom the last many years, I could just see, I want to test out. I want to, you know, it just seems like there needs to be some sort of parameters when the student can decide that they want to take this test, because maybe right in the middle of the semester, you know, is it before, after, during, middle, and is this a pass-fail situation where, you know, if they pass the test, then, you know, that they've done it, or is there a specific assessment, like it says in this fiscal note, that's going to be done? I think it's just something, I could just see the temptation for kids wanting to just test out so they don't have to finish going to the class.
And Madam Chair, I would say that you're exactly correct. Yeah, I would not anticipate any district in the state saying if you pass, if you got a D, that you've demonstrated mastery to challenge out, or even a C. But districts do give kids credit for a C or a B grade or an A grade. So the question is left up to the districts to figure out what they determine as mastery. We're not trying to take over from them the assessment that they make in their individual districts. All courses are different. You may have Algebra 1 in one district that's slightly different than Algebra 1 in another district, and the mastery is determined at the district level, not by us on the statewide assessment. So,
in regards to that, so just any time during the year, a student can just ask they want to take this test and get out of class. I mean, at what point is this? Before? Is it after? Is it during? Is it at the? I mean, it seems like I could just see this to be a nightmare potentially for the teachers if the kids just, you know, randomly want to get out of class.
And Madam Chair, I would say that, you know, the purpose of this bill is leave that flexibility up to the individual districts in their own policies. And if, you know, if the district wants to set up a policy so that if you've gone through a single semester and you've been a high academic achiever and you've been able to read ahead or do Khan Academy or something else and learn the second semester of that course, if the district wants to allow it at different times, or if they only want challenge before the class starts. I think if you look at the Anchorage one, you have to be enrolled, you have to be in the class, or you have to, but you have the example, the work there from Anchorage, that's a two-page district policy that makes all those determinations. I don't think putting it in statute would be a good policy for us to go through and determine exactly when each district would make that determination. This just says that each district has to have a policy to allow students to challenge out of courses. It doesn't say that you have to do it at the beginning of the course or midway through the course. If we have students that already know all the material in the third quarter, I think that some districts would say we're better off not having those kids just sitting in there once they already know all the material and if they can demonstrate mastery. But that policy parameter is left up to each individual district to design. It's just that they are required under this bill to have a policy that allows challenging of courses. It doesn't say what that, it doesn't say that Matsu has to be like Hooper Bay or the Matsu has to be like the Kenai Peninsula. Each district can make its own policy.
Right. And I have two other questions in regard. One, I don't see the Anchorage School District in here in the program that I was given. Did you find that? Okay, what page is it on?
I don't know.
Is it that the packet of three pages?
It's called Anchorage School District Credit by Choice Program. Yeah, you have it. That's it.
Okay. And what number is it?
It doesn't have a number. It's three pages out of one of their policy documents. It's, number four in the on basis, document number four.
Okay, so you've talked to the Anchorage School District about this, and what were their thoughts?
Yes, we talked to, Madam Chair, we talked to the districts, and they sent us their policy of what they're already doing. So Anchorage already has a credit by choice program. Matsu already has, Kenai has. So we have a number of districts that do have the policies. The problem is with ANSEP and other, that there are districts that don't have a policy. And so we had kids that had already passed the college course that testified before us, and they went back to their high school and had to sit in the high school course because they hadn't had enough seat time. And seat time was the determination of whether you passed the course or not. And there'd also been a question, well, what about PE? Specifically, Anchorage policy exempts PE. I mean, obviously, if you had a welding course, you couldn't say, well, I learned the book, and I'm going to demonstrate mastery of welding but I just want to take a test. This allows every district to determine what demonstrating mastery of that course work is. It just says you have to have a mechanism that allows students to test out. It doesn't say it's a statewide assessment. It says that the district has the parameters of the assessment. They create the policy. It doesn't mean that Anchorage has to have the same policy as Matsu. It just means that they all have to have a policy to allow students not to vegetate in courses because they already know, but it's a requirement for graduation. And if it's a sequence and you already know Algebra 1 and you're going to require that student to be bored and sitting in a classroom with seat time, that is not effective education. That does not move our education system along. What that does is leads to dropouts of school because we have smart kids that are inappropriately taking courses, and this gives a mechanism, requires a mechanism for those kids that can already demonstrate mastery of the course to challenge the course and get out of it. So,
and I understand the concept. I think the concept is a very good concept, but I think the application is where I find it challenging. When can the students just randomly do this? And also, let's say they test out of, let's say, Alaska Studies, and they're done at then where do they go? If halfway through the semester, where is that child going to wander the halls? I mean, where are they going to go? I'm just looking at a practical level, knowing that I've been in the classroom. A lot of kids get done with their tests, and it was very hard work to keep them focused on something else as I was still trying to get, the other part of the students up to the level that they were. But I want to make sure that this doesn't have unintended consequences. Oh. Go ahead.
Madam Chair, if I could point out the Anchorage School District, I'm not sure if it's a policy or procedures document, but their credit by choice document, the bottom of page, that's Roman numeral 10, Item 7, under credit by choice, it says, credit by choice is not available to meet the requirement of Alaska Studies or Lifetime Personal Fitness. There's a lot of detail in these three pages on exactly how the student achieves the credit for the course taken outside of the school district. And my understanding is that high school students in particular have trouble getting enough extra time in their school day to go, for example, to King Career Center. And if they can get out of the way courses like this, it gives them time to be able to. So they're, I don't believe there'll be students sitting around twiddling their thumbs looking for something to do or getting in trouble there. They are, these are kinds of students that are looking for additional stimulation, and they will do productive things with their time. That's what I believe the school district has it set up to do.
Okay, maybe Alaska Studies wasn't the best example. Let's say history, let's say math, let's say anything. I mean, just making sure those students are directed somewhere to a specific place, because the library, I know, only would let us send two students per class down to the library. And parents don't want these kids just going anywhere if they've, you know, decided that they're going to test out of this classroom. I mean, I could just see this could create some confusion for the teachers.
Well, I think
I guess the department, maybe I should bring them up and ask them what they think. Representative Ledoux.
So if a student finished up their classes earlier in the day, could they just go home?
Madam Chair,
which
it depends.
I don't necessarily think is a bad idea, but I'm just curious.
Madam Chair, it's going to depend on the policy by that district. The Anchorage School District that says that you still have to be taking so many classes and everything else. This is a way, if you have a student that knows Algebra 1, you get them out of Algebra 1 and they're taking Algebra 2. If they know Algebra 2, they're not sitting through a year of Algebra 1 and a year of Algebra 2. They're going to be on pre-calculus and other courses. They may be, you know, the problem that Representative Chair Reinbold identified is a problem we're trying to solve. You have a number of kids that are always ahead of the class, and so much far ahead of the class that their problem, because you're trying to send them to the library, trying to give them something else to do. Well, they should be doing something, but they should be in a more advanced class, mm-hmm. where they are being challenged, they're not being bored, they're not twiddling their thumbs. I mean, it's exactly the question that you're trying to make sure that we don't have an unintended consequence. The unintended consequence of not allowing children to be in the appropriate class is that they're bored, they're already done with the work early, and you have teachers scrambling trying to deal with a wide variety of knowledge bases and educational bases within one classroom, instead of putting that student into a classroom where they'll be challenged, where they'll be actively engaged in the material. So that, you know, and it doesn't mean that every student has to. I mean, a student doesn't have to challenge a course and get out of it. It's just that a district has to provide the opportunity for those people that can demonstrate mastery of a material to go on to other material. It doesn't mean that the student necessarily is, you know, going to the King Career Center is something that can be done. You know, you can also be taking a college course. If you see in the program number 3 under the Anchorage District, deals specifically with college courses. So the idea of this is to make sure that we don't have a policy in our state that says that we are going to keep kids inappropriately in boarding classrooms, and that they have the ability, if they have the initiative, to be engaged in performing strongly.
Representative Ledoux.
Are there any school districts that are going to be testifying against this? Because frankly, I think this is such a good idea. I'd like to hear from, you know, the school districts that don't allow this to see what their rationale is.
Well, we contacted every school district in the state, and we received back from the ones I mentioned, which that already have these kind of programs, which are Anchorage, Kenai, Matsu, and North Star. Some are talking about Erangel and Huna. We did not hear from a number of other districts. So hopefully they'll call in. They've been notified that, you know, House Bill 190 is being considered that would be this requirement.
Representative Liu.
I'm looking for a fiscal note. Does this have any fiscal consequences here? Because the one thing I don't like is, you know, like unfunded mandates. And I mean, basically, I think the school district should be doing this on their own. And it kind of bothers me to set, you know, the standards from the state and then not have any money to fund it if it's going to cost anything.
And Madam Chair, this is not a, it has a zero fiscal note because we are not imposing a new test or a new assessment or anything else from the state. We are just saying that for the courses that the districts offer, they need to have a that they decide to, because it's their policy of what they want to exempt and what they want to allow. But
so
they would do their own assessments, and like I say, every school district has to have some way to assess students leaving a course already.
So you don't follow up
here.
Yes, I said fiscal note, and I realized that would be something that it would cost us, whereas we wouldn't have a fiscal note if it was going to cost the school districts. So you don't anticipate any additional expense for the school districts, though?
Through the chair, Representative Ledoux, if you look on the Anchorage School District sample, they actually, in their policy, have that you have to receive a 90% score, and a fee of $85 is required to advance to compensate the teacher for creating and administration the evaluation of the test. So they have taken care of any fiscal impact within their exact policy of, if you want to test out, you can do it, but it is going to be some work for that assessment, and they require an $85 fee.
Representative Ledoux.
Well, actually, I think I'd have a problem with that. So you keep a bright kid from a low-income family in a course that they really don't need to have because they can't afford the $85 fee? I mean, that kind of doesn't make sense.
And through the chair, Representative Ledoux, in most of these cases, there are policies that take care of those things, scholarships, waivers of fees, those kind of things. So I'm not telling you that I know in detail. We have the policy guidelines from here. I would hate to put in state law, in state statute, the very details of how an assessment will be done, what a cutoff score will be. We're saying demonstrate mastery, so that what we do is we get kids engaged and challenged in their learning career, keep them all on track. We know that, you know, a large percentage of the dropouts in the state of Alaska have passed the high school qualifying exam. They're not kids they're kids that are bored in the classes they're in. They're not being challenged, they're not being engaged. And we just need to make sure, I think, from a policy standpoint, that we do what we can to say, hey, school districts, we want to make sure that you have some policy in place that allows students to challenge out of courses where they already demonstrate mastery of the material, and so that they can go on and go to higher learning and more engaged learning for themselves, and keeping our students on track instead of losing students along the way.
Representative Drummond.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I've been looking at the credit by choice of the Anchorage School District, and under program number 6 on page Roman numeral 11, community service and field study, they have quite an extensive list of pre-approved district programs that will earn students half a unit of credit for 120 hours of acceptable service in For example, South Central Foundation's RAISE intern program, Anchorage Youth Court, Johns Hopkins Institute for the Academic Advancement of Youth, peer education team trainers, Anchorage Youth Symphony, Points of Light Youth Leadership, Alaska Native Heritage Center courses, Big Brothers, Big Sisters. These are students that are already busy as heck, and it's, I think it's terrific to give them credit for things they have already accomplished and allow them to continue, in this case, a lot of community service and extracurricular activities that do get them high school credit. So I think this is a very, I think this is a pretty good bill. I would like to hear from any school districts that are online in terms of the nuts and bolts of administering this, Madam Chair.
Right, yeah, we'll get to those in just a minute. Yeah, because I wanted to just point out that I know there's schools that have open forums at more the elementary level and even some of the high schools, and I wish I could remember. I think it's Stellar, Representative Drummond, you may know, but where they can work at their own pace, and the school is designed for that type of student, that type of curriculum, and it seems like this would work well in those type of situations, but I don't know if the traditional schools, you know, that this will work well. And so I personally like to hear from principals and see in the traditional schools, you know, if this is something that they think is a great idea. Because conceptually, like I said, it sounds reasonable, but the practical matter alarms me, knowing that I've been in the high schools the past many, many years, and the last thing we need to do is have students, and we don't know where they are, you know, and what the next step is, if they're going to be doing in that classroom and taking the next level, so it's a multiple tiered in that same classroom. If they transfer to another classroom that may already be full and there's not a seat for them, I mean, I just think the implications of this may be quite challenging. So I definitely would like to hear from principals, and you know, the practical day-to-day application of this would be great. But I guess we'll go ahead and go, if there's no further questions from the committee, to Herb. Herb Schroeder, are you on there? We're going to open public testimony right now.
Yeah, I'm here.
Do you want to go ahead?
Can you hear me?
Yes, please state your name, affiliation, and if you're here to answer questions or testify.
Yeah, I'm Herb Schroeder, and I'm the Vice Provost and Founder for the Alaska Native Science and Engineering Program at the University of Alaska Anchorage, and I have a brief statement, and then I can be available for questions, too.
Okay, please go ahead.
Okay, and my thanks to Representative Seaton and the House Education Committee for working on this legislation, and also thanks to all of you for the recent legislative citation honoring ANSEP. ANSEP components allow students from anywhere in the state to complete the courses necessary to earn the Alaska Performance Scholarship. And we do this by bringing students into Anchorage during the summer, where they complete university classes taught by university faculty in the ANSEP Acceleration Academy. The problem for many students is when they successfully complete a university course, they do not always earn equivalent high school credit. For example, a student can successfully complete Calculus 1 at the university and return to the school district and earn one half of a credit for Calculus 1. This bill will provide a mechanism for students to earn the correct high school credits completing the university course. Thank you.
Okay, we have a few questions for, if you don't mind holding on.
No, I'm here.
Representative Drummond.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Thank you for being available, Dr. Schroeder. I'm not clear what your concern is about the transfer of credits. If I remember correctly, as a former member of the Anchorage School Board, I think high school consists of 24 credits for the 4 years of study. A half a credit of high school is 140. I think it's just one semester class. It doesn't translate precisely to college credits. Could you explain your concern, sir?
Yeah. If you come to the university and take Calculus 1, you take the full Calculus 1 course, which is differential calculus, in one semester. If you take that same course at the university, at the school district level in Anchorage, for example, it takes 2 semesters for the same course. And so, when the student takes their Calculus 1 credits from the university back to the district, the policy there says that they earn half of a credit. So even though the content is the same, I mean, it's university calculus class, they only earn half of a credit for that within the district. And this is a problem. We had the best example is a student in Nome who finished Calculus 1, Calculus 2, Calculus 3, differential equations, and partial differential equations here at our university in court taught by university faculty. And his mother called and said that the school district told him that he could have enough credits to graduate from high school.
Madam Chair, if I could.
Please.
I can see how this is a problem, but I don't think that's something that this committee can deal with. I think that's a conversation that you may have to have with the Anchorage School District. And I'm looking at their Credit by Choice program, and it says, college courses must be 100 level and above. Students must register for at least 3 semester hours to receive half a high school credit. And I think that's the problem that you're stating right there. A 3 semester hour course is a full semester, and they're only giving a half a year, I think, high school credit is how that translates. But I'm going to refrain from making any judgments because I don't recall the exact credit situation at the Anchorage School District. So, but I think that's something that the program would have to work out with the Anchorage School District.
And Herb?
Yeah.
I just want to say there's been unbelievable. I've had a tour of your facility there, and resounding positive. I've never gone to an education facility in this state where I went and the students were so zealous. They were so thrilled about the program. I mean, they just wanted to be a host and take me around and show me. They were just so proud of the program. So I know you guys are doing great things there. And it's really, really neat. This makes perfect sense to me in college and the more, environment where kids can challenge out and then move on. There's another opportunity to move in and out. And I think conceptually this is a great idea. I just feel like we need to make sure that the districts on a day-to-day basis and the teachers who are having to deal with this, these challenging, when are the challenge courses going to be have? I don't want to complicate their days and I just wanted to say thank you for where you are and for what you're doing. And if you could hold on in case there's other programs or questions that come up, we'd really appreciate it.
Yeah, I'll be here.
Okay. We're going to move on to Gene Stone.
Okay. Yeah, I'm here. Yeah, for the record, my name is Gene Stone. I'm the assistant superintendent for the Madison Borough School District. And thank you for having me here today to be able to speak to HB 190.
Absolutely. So do you want to go ahead and testify right now?
Yeah, sure. Yeah, and, just listening to Dr. Schroeder's testimony and kind of, seeing really where the help can come from, I think he's really hit it on the head. The help for all districts really would come from just what he described. A student taking a Calc 1 class at the college level and then having to go back and told that they're a semester short, it just doesn't make sense.
Right.
And that's why as a district we have policy that addresses just that so that we don't have those kinds of conflicts. And as we started our middle college program, we would have had those exact that exact same scenario that Dr. Schroeder had described. Students that are in the middle college earning taking college level courses, and if they were only scheduled to take 4 college courses, like that, their English, their math, their histories, taking 4 in a semester, they would have come up short in terms of what their high school graduation requirement would have been. So that's why we made our adjustments to the policy. And so we've heard it from so many different parents, from, really our what I would consider our customers, parents that say, my kids have taken college credit and, they're coming up short. They've got it, but they're being told that even though they did the equivalent of a year's worth of work, they have an additional semester of seat time that they're going to have to make up. As a district, we've addressed that already, and we have other credit options already. So the other credit options really isn't an issue. I think it was Representative Drummond was concerned about why you might do this or how it might create some complexities for a school or a school district. I'll give you a good example of why you'd want the ability for a student to test out. Say you had a freshman the first semester failed Algebra 1 and still remained in that algebra course that second semester, did better at the end of it, is passing it and can demonstrate that he understands that content for the full year. He's done the seat time or she's done the seat time. Want to give them an opportunity through a summative final exam to demonstrate that they've mastered what the content is, so that why at the very end when they can show that they've had satisfied what the requirements of that course are, and make them go sit through all that early, a whole semester worth of academic and Algebra 1 all over again. Doesn't make sense. It also crowds up classes, jams, makes another log jam, puts the kid out of sequence again for, if he was going to continue on to a geometry or a Algebra 2.
Okay, so I'm going to go ahead and ask you a question, Gene. Thank you for being here today and testifying. We really do appreciate it. So if a student, at what point would you think that they would be testing out? The middle, the end, whenever they felt like it? Where would these assessments take place?
Well, I think Representative Stevens speaks to this well. These are things that are within districts and board policies. These are all things that are thought out quite well. People wouldn't just leave those to chance. For us, we look at these on a case-by-case basis, and when it makes sense, it's in the best interest of all involved. We give an opportunity to test out. We have a number of opportunities for other credit options that are come through online learning, Apex Learning, Anchorage does the same, where kids can accelerate themselves. It's already out there. It's really just what's happening in education now. I think the mantra now in terms of education is you've got to have some blended approach opportunities, and online addresses a lot of those things. We have cyber centers at all of our schools, and a lot of this is just setting up your learning plans for all your students and directing them to the to what they need. Some students may be short credit, so you give them an opportunity to add on an online course. They may not be able to be getting actual seat time face-to-face with an actual teacher, but they can go to a cyber center, log onto a computer, and start doing their online work. It's just, another option for kids, another way to earn credit.
Yes, Gene, and I understand conceptually this is a great idea, but when we were limited to sending two kids to the library and let's say five wanted to test out, I just think you are a district, so we are trying to ask the more detailed questions to you.
Like I said, as a district, we manage those things. We certainly wouldn't just say, this is just open thing. You run down and just take a test, and if you pass it, it's just managed much differently than that. That conversation would include meeting with a counselor, with you know, maybe the kid had already gone through seat time and failed the course. The teacher had made a recommendation, you know what, these are some of the circumstances that led to this, you know, kids failing the class, why I would recommend or approve the student opting for testing out. You could have maybe a student who had an overseas experience and, you know, lived in France for a year, and really it might, and speaks French fluently, it might make sense for that student to be able to test out for a world language exam. It's really not designed to just have an open, you know, where kids just line up and say, I think I'll take a shot at this one and see if I can pass the test.
Okay, thank you. Okay, if you can hold on in case we get questions, we would appreciate that.
Sure.
Okay, Representative Seaton, uh-huh.
There was a question that came up about Anchorage's policy with college courses and the seat time. This does not override their policies at all. It just gives an opportunity if those students actually had mastered that full semester, that full year's worth of information, they could get they could challenge the course and get full credit for the year's course if they mastered a full year's of in this case we're talking about a math course. However, there's nothing in here that says that the district has to change its policy of how it correlates college course time to their year-long course of study. It just says that if the student has mastered all of the year-long's worth of data, then they could challenge the course, and if they demonstrate that mastery to the sufficiency of the district, then they could get course. So it gets around that bottleneck of having to make a district-wide policy on all college courses. You know, Anchorage has a policy on college courses and how those relate. This says if you can demonstrate mastery of the topic that the year-long course, then you can get credit for the year-long course. But you have to demonstrate mastery of the sufficiency of the district to gain that credit. Mm-hmm. And as the testifier just said, what we're trying to do in education is move students along so that they are engaged, so that they are progressing, so that they get college courses, so that when they go to college, they already have some. We're trying to make sure that we are not in a situation of saying, okay, one size fits all, and everybody has to take Algebra 1, Algebra 2, and has to sit all the way through. So that's
we got the conceptual. That's done. I mean, we're all on board with the conceptual. That's not the issue here. Is the intention, as soon as that student, let's say at 9 weeks in, wants to challenge the course, what's the intention? Is it to move to another classroom? Is it to go to the library and study online? Is it to go do community service and be out on the street? I don't know. I just, you know, that's the issue that I personally have, you know, with this bill. Where's that student going to go? Or is he going to sit in that classroom and create problems, you know, and need another computer and, you know, to move on to the next level? That's where mine, and that's why I would like to bring the department up and just see what the department, you know, is feeling in regards to that, the day-to-day application. It's hard enough to manage, you know, 32, 34, 36 students in the classroom. And the last thing I want to do is create more chaos than this student now is moving over to the classroom across the hallway and creating disruption in the classroom across the hall. So.
And Madam Chair, you know, it wasn't our intention to say that one size has to fit all for every district and that those are district policy criteria. That's why we left those criteria up to the district. We're not trying to impose those through statute. We're just saying that each district has to have a policy.
Correct. Okay. I understand that. Thank you.
For the record, I'm Mike Hanley, the Commissioner for the Department of Education.
Thank you, Commissioner, for being here today.
You bet.
So basically, I mean, you've heard the testimony. Thank you for once again sitting through these meetings. What is the department's view on this bill?
I think that this this bill does what's intended, is when a student understands what is being taught in a class, that they have the ability to prove that proficiency level and open up other opportunities for them. So I think that's what this does. What, you know, having listened to the testimony, I do believe that a district could look at this and set a policy in place that says, and I'll be gladly corrected by the sponsor if I misspeak, but the way I interpret this is that when a district shall provide the opportunity for a student to test out, a district could say, we will allow the opportunity for students to test at the beginning of the year, and it would meet what this bill says. They could say, we will allow students to test out at the beginning, at the semester, and at the end. I mean, they could set their policy in place, and it would meet what the intent of this bill is, that, or at least how this bill is written. I believe that to be true. I don't see it here where there's an obligation to say at any time in the middle of a semester, you know, that they could, but they're surely not required to. They can put into place what they believe is best educational practice, and I believe that that's where it should be. It wouldn't be at the department level, and I appreciate the flexibility when I look for empowering schools to make the best decisions. I appreciate that flexibility to make those decisions at that local level.
Okay. All right, great. Is there any other questions on the committee? No? No other questions on the committee? Okay. Thank you. And really appreciate that, Commissioner. Is there anybody else in the room that would like to testify? Okay. Well, at this time, since three people are missing, and I'd like to get their input from the committee on their feelings in regards to this bill, we're going to go ahead and leave public testimony open. And this obviously has brought up discussions today and some issues that need to be addressed. So this reason, we're going to go ahead and hold House Bill 190. We will be re-meeting on Monday. I believe it's April 8th at 8 o'clock in the morning. It hasn't been scheduled yet. Okay. So at this time, just look for announcements of when the next education committee. And with that, we're going to adjourn at 9:15. Thank you.